Alrighty, welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell, very busy tonight, too, putting together programs and interviews for the website this week, and we got a lot of them. I want to get started, Tim. Oh, by the way, Tim, hello. How are you?
I'm well.
Okay, good. Glad to hear it. I want to get your thoughts, Tim. I don't really want to get into the Patriots because I'm sure that dominated, Boston talk radio today. I don't want to get into the Red Sox because they've been dominated. But I would like to talk a little high school sports and maybe get your reaction to how things went this week. And I will start just by mentioning the scores and then maybe get your reaction. We'll start with Peabody over Revere, 40-0. That was kind of a surprise to me, the size of the score. But apparently it was a very emotional night for the Peabody Tanners. One of their players has leukemia. It was a big night in honor of him. And Lou Ciccatelli and his Revere Patriots made a very generous donation to the family to help him with his struggle with leukemia. So Peabody 40, Revere nothing. Quite a game.
Yeah, you know, when you play with an emotional edge due to a tragedy such as that, the adrenaline never leaves you. There's something that, this is, as a player, it's your way of doing something for the family, of marking the occasion. And it's a level that doesn't subside throughout the game. You play to the minute after the game is over. You're on such an emotional high. And sometimes that can be detrimental because you can lose focus. But evidently, it was an emotion that had been very well channeled by Coach Betancourt. And kudos to the kids who played such a fabulous game. And Lou Ciccatelli is a good friend of ours. And you hate to see anybody get beat up like that. Because he's had some really solid teams over the past 6 to 7 years, and this may have been a game where they may not have been able to overcome the emotion of the other team.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to run down some more scores, Tim, and then maybe you can, make a comment on them if you want, and don't if you don't, but we'll start with Salem 45 over Chelsea 6, Marblehead 25, Concord Carlisle 6. Another great start for Marblehead.
Yeah, what we've come to expect from the Magicians, over the last dozen years or so, Coach Redloff has just got these guys into such a mindset and dedication to the team and to the game that you really don't expect anything less from those guys.
Haverhill 25, Beverly 14. You talked to Coach Hutton.
Yeah, he was a little disappointed, but again, he was missing a bunch of players, a bunch of starters, and he was very pleased with the effort that he got from the kids that had to step up and fill the gaps, and that I think is going to serve them well down the road. Certainly, it's not a league game or a conference game, and it's one that they have traditionally played. And he feels that if he had had those guys that the players that were missing, it would have been a different story for him, because he said the play, the 79-yard pass play for the touchdown, really took a lot of wind out of the sail. They were just behind by a couple of points, and then they had Haverhill pinned in deep. They just, I think it was a sack, or Haverhill taking a penalty, and the offense just caught the defense pitching in, and the kid went down the middle, and the quarterback hit him with a perfect strike, and Dixie by the door. That was the game.
Well, there were a couple of quick strikes in our game. The game of the week was was Tewksbury 35 and Danvers 21, close game until the very second half of the fourth quarter, and we've been over that a few times. We are going to talk with Ryan Nolan again this week, as we will be, our game of the week again will be emanating from Danvers, as Haverhill will be the opponent coming into Dr. Deering Stadium. Bishop Fenwick, I'll just give you the rest of the winners. Bishop Fenwick, Hamilton Wenham. We do have a conversation with Hamilton Wenham's coach Tim Fryermuth coming up probably tomorrow. St. John's Prep, big start over Marshfield. We'll be talking also with the Prep coach Brian St. Pierre. Essex Tech, Newburyport over Masco, Auburn, Manchester Essex. We'll have Coach Joe Grimes on as well, not tonight, but we'll be talking with him. Stoneham beat Winthrop, Linfield winning, North Reading, Triton, Latin Academy, Lynn Classical, Methuen, and Watertown all winners over the weekend. And again, our game of the week this week will be Haverhill at Danvers. That will be a 6:30 start. And a score I skipped over deliberately because we're going to be talking with one of the coaches here momentarily, if all goes well, is St. Mary's of Lynn 41 and Kip 0. And Tim, we know Coach Driscoll, again, early on one of our biggest supporters, and we're always happy to see how well he does with his team.
Yeah, certainly. And you know, St. Mary's, again, is another one of those teams that's been riding high over the last dozen or so years, continuing the winning tradition under Coach Driscoll as before. And good to see them get off on the right foot. Kip has proved a stumbling block for a lot of the public schools. So we'll see what they can make of it.
Okay. And what's going to be interesting is Coach Driscoll, of course, who emanates that's twice I've used that word. That's weird. Coach Driscoll is from Winthrop, and he will be playing, his team will be playing the Winthrop Vikings this coming week. And let me see. I think that's a Friday night game, but let me double up and make sure. Yes, St. Mary's at Winthrop on Friday at 6:30. So that's going to be interesting. We're going to talk with Coach Driscoll in just a few minutes about that game. Big games coming up this week include Linfield at Marblehead and St. John's Prep at Central Catholic. Again, we will be talking with Brian St. Pierre this week. Peabody at Lynn Classical, that ought to be a big one as well. And Gloucester returns home. They've got a few home games this year, and they're going to try to take on Chelsea, see what they can do in that game. Chelsea 45-6 on the wrong end of the 45-6 score with Salem. So, Coach, any other thoughts before we check in with Coach Driscoll?
No, let's go to Sean.
Okay, well, first we'll take a break, and then I do want to mention that we have a lot of interviews coming up. I mentioned a bunch of them. Bill Newell will have some as well. Just seeing if we missed anybody. Yeah, Bill will be talking with Coach Brian Vaughn this week. I'll be talking with Coach Ben Smolsky up in Newburyport, and lots of other stuff as well. Plus, Bill will be hosting the Salem News Sports Writers once again this week, and they will be discussing this and these games and more. The Endicott Football College football show is already posted with Coach McGonigal. That's all right here on our website. In addition, we'll be covering news stories as well, so please check out our website from time to time. I just want to see if Bill will have Phil Stacey, Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, good heavens, Nick Giannino, Nick Kukuru, will all be on tomorrow, and the sports writers will be talking about high school football and previewing some of the key games to be played this weekend, and they'll be sharing notes from soccer, field hockey, and even baseball. Okay. All right, so we'll take our first break of the evening, and when we come back, if all goes well, we'll be talking with St. Mary's High School football coach Sean Driscoll. You are listening to North Shore Sports Night here on MSO News Sports.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up. MSO, NewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore with great local sports coverage. Live play-by-play football, Monday Night Sports Night Show, the Game Night Football Show, feature spotlight interviews with coaches and players, the Salem News Sports Writers Podcast, and joining us this fall, Nick and Nick in the North Shore Sports Desk and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk, the place to hear and see positive local coverage, making connections that support the North Shore.
Okay, we are back live here. Of course, you could be listening to it 10 years from now, and it won't be live. Anyway, you get the idea. Coach Sean Driscoll from St. Mary's High School is with us. And, Coach, welcome back. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
We're doing okay, I think. You have to ask Tim.
Hi, Sean.
How you doing? You guys have a good summer?
Good. Well.
Yeah, I mean, the lawn died, but, you know, I was just thinking, I don't know if you had any time off this summer, Coach, if you had, you know, vacation, but for people on vacation, this was one of the most spectacular summers I've ever seen. I heard people in Gloucester say, are you sitting down, listen to this one, it's too hot to go to the beach.
Jeez.
And the other one was, it's too hot to go out on the boat. Now that's hot, I would think.
Yeah, that was a pretty hot summer. Yeah, we had the heat wave for 4 or 5 days in a row.
All right. How'd you make out with football camp in August?
It was good. We had a good camp, especially you know, midweek once we start going in pads, and when you have an older team and a lot of returners, it makes camp a little bit easier. As far as, you know, I shouldn't say easier, but a little faster. You know what I mean? You can move a little quicker with what you try to do.
Uh-huh.
That's always a good thing.
Tim.
Sean, as you look at this year's team, how does it compare to teams in the past?
Well, I will tell you, I think we have the most seniors I probably ever had on a high school football team, since I've been here, at least. I know that. And we returned a lot of skill guys. You know, we still have, you know, holes in certain spots, like any team does, even when we return a bunch of seniors from the previous year, successful year. And I think we're trying to build it off of last year's team and keep some of the same principles we've had and try to keep moving forward and coming off a 10-2 season last year. And a lot of guys back is always a good thing.
Tell us about some of your leaders coming into the season, and then I want to ask you about how they and others did in the Kip game.
Yeah, I think you come back, obviously everyone knows about Dave Brown. He's one of the better players, I think, better athletes in Eastern Mass, mm-hmm. You know, on the football field and on the basketball court. And he's a great kid. He works hard at the game and understands the game. And, you know, he's one of probably on the field leader, Derek Calangis. Another one, he's been playing for us for 4 years now. This is last year, and he's, you know, really come a long way the past 3 years, being one of our main guys. And, you know, with that up front, you got, you know, Nick Sacco and Jack Knox, our defensive ends and tight ends. They're really playing really well for us. They came into camp in really good shape and been working at it all summer. So they're a little bit stronger, a little bit faster, which is always good.
Before I go back to Tim, the Boston Globe write-up says, you know, strength, skill positions, concerns, line play. Were some of your concerns put aside in that first game?
Well, no, not really. I think, you know, first game, you get into the first game after a preseason, and it's early in the year. You know, you're still kind of not in preseason mode, but you're still evaluating what's going on in all aspects of the game, you know, from special teams to, you know, who's doing what consistently right, who's doing wrong, whether it's an assignment or a physical thing. And I think we played a pretty good game, but we have miles to go. All the key spots on our football team, you know, we're driven by our front of our offensive line offensively and our defensive line defensively. And, you know, the style we play here is obviously any football game, I think any coach would tell you how important it is to have those five or six key guys up front. And, you know, we're still working to get to that place.
You know, Phil, when you were in the Northeast Conference, the scheduling was always pretty straightforward. I think you left just before it got into the wacky mode of all the restructuring. How does your scheduling pretty much set in the conference that you're in, or do you have to play games with it?
Well, this year we lost our week one, and we were fortunate. You know, Kip is located in Lynn, right across the street from our school, and they've had very successful seasons in a quick fashion. I think the program's probably 4 to 5 years old right now, and Coach Rabbit's done a great job there. So when they became available week one and we lost our week one, well, we thought it only made sense to play and open up Manning Field with the new turf and stuff, the game, and it was good. You know, the score was 41-0, it says, but I would tell you it was 14-0 at the half. It was a ball game. It doesn't reflect, you know, the effort that was put in by them, and they gave us some trouble at spots during the game, especially in the first half, and we battled bad field position in the second quarter, and our defense did a nice job keeping us in the game, which was good to see. I thought that at the time they kind of slowed our offense down, and in the third quarter we came out and really played a hell of a third quarter to kind of put it away.
Every coach I've talked to so far about the weekend games, Coach, has mentioned, I don't want to call it jitters, but mistakes that I guess you don't want to see ever, but you certainly don't want to see, you know, later in the season. They sort of happen at the beginning of the season.
That's the way to put it right there. I mean, if you watch high school football games and you watch certain stuff, you see a bunch of mistakes, regardless how many, you know, how good you think your team is, there's always going to be stuff that's correctable. But even if you watch Saturday afternoon or Thursday night or Friday night college football, whatever it was, how many games were lost by 1 point, by a blocked extra point, someone, you know, stepping the wrong way or someone not lined up right? If you look at that, I think there was 3 or 4 games on Saturday in the college level that there was a lot of mistakes in their first one. So it's at every level, I'm sure. But, you know, after this game, we were happy with the result, but we weren't happy with some of the stuff that, that we missed and got to do a better job coaching it and stuff like that. It's just, that was kind of a frustrating thing. But overall, we want to see effort, and our kids played hard, and that's all you can ask for, especially in week one. Excuse me.
You there, Tim?
Oh, I'm sitting with you and you're waiting on me. Sean, what year is this at St. Mary's for you?
It's my fifth football season.
Well, time is going by. Remember that?
Yep.
I remember the first day meeting you over at the gym.
Yes.
Good.
28-14. 28-14 at St. Mary's. That ain't too shabby.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, Coach. Picking up on what you study or you know how you assess the first game. When you look at the tape, and I've asked a couple of coaches this, actually one so far, but I want to ask you about it. Is there anything you look for in particular on the tape, or does the tape tell its own story? The video tell its own story, even though you were at ground level watching the game.
Yeah, I think it's important when you're in the ground level and the game's going on. Obviously, you're not going to be able to look at everything, but when you go back later that evening, you look at the tape, and the first thing we always look for as coaches, I think I'm coaches, is effort. You know, effort's right away. I mean, you can make a mistake, but go hard. You can kind of live with it. But, you know, assignment is number one thing, obviously, and then you combine that with effort and see who's doing the right stuff and
that's
getting
interesting.
There.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the physicality of football. If, you know, especially with a younger group at times in certain spots, can they handle the physicality of football? You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, like I tell my kids for every game, we want to see you compete and compete as hard as you can. And there's going to be mistakes, but if you go hard, things should work out all the time. And I think it's something I think every coach lives by.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you mentioned that, Sean, and you know, it's like you have to kids go out there and give it 100%. It's not going to always be there. The win isn't always going to be there. But you can look back and say, you know, well, I really left it all on the field. And I think that's where the kids do a lot of growing.
Yeah, as I said, I think effort is number one. You know, and you give them great effort, that means you're competing as hard as you can, regardless of the obstacle in front of you.
I want to ask you a question about a comparison of the two teams you've coached as a head coach, Winthrop and St. Mary's. I'm guessing at St. Mary's you have good numbers and you can substitute. But talking about effort, which I agree is just, it's so important, if you don't have the numbers like some of the smaller schools, how does a kid, can a kid take take a play off while still on the field? Is that possible?
Yeah,
and get away with it?
It's a great question. I think sometimes you get exposed with that, but it does happen when you're a small school and you have less than 40 kids. You're playing a lot of guys two ways. Sometimes they're playing all special teams and you can't get them a break, and it wears on you, especially early in the year until they get into what we'll call game shape and being able to play four quarters and all that.
Mm-hmm.
We're fortunate that here now that the program has been built up now. We've got 56 people in the kids in the program, players, which is the most I've ever had since I've been here. And out of all the years, I don't know if you guys knew, but there's an equipment shortage throughout the country,
no.
Like helmets and shoulder pads and stuff. Out of all the years to get that, it was tough getting them all fitted, but
wow.
No, we got it done, and we have a very strong group of younger players that came out for football this year, which is exciting, which I said we never had this many people. But to go to your, back to your question, you know, it is hard when, at smaller schools, and I've been there, and at least this year we have a little bit of depth where we're comfortable, you know, giving someone a breather here or there at certain times in the game,
mm-hmm.
which is good. I think it's good for the team, and I think it's any time you can get more players active is a good thing.
John, are you running a JV and a freshman program as well?
Right now, we're just at the JV level for a game because I have a lot of, you know, 9th, 8th graders and 10th graders that are playing. But there'll be some sporadic, maybe, freshman games sprinted in there if we can find the time for it and find a team that wants to play a couple of times.
All right, Coach, the personal emotion coming up in this game, I mean, you have a love of Winthrop. You know the kids. I'm not sure you know all the kids as well as you used to because you have to concentrate on your team. You know the people in the town. What's that mean to you now as a coach, as a successful coach in for both teams?
Well, it's Winthrop's a special place. I still work there. I'm a recreation director. A lot of these kids work for me this summer.
Okay, yep.
They're on that team. So I know a lot of the families and some of the kids' parents I went to school with that are still there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gonna be a special night. It's you know, it's a great place to play. It's still a great atmosphere. I do miss the old stadium a little bit, before they built the new one, but at the same time, it's a great place to play, and there's a lot of excitement. They play very well at home, and they're coming off a game against a very good Division VI team in Stoneham, someone in our division that played very physical, very tough, and there are two or three plays difference than probably winning that football game, or at least tying it and putting it in overtime if you were to go back and watch it. So, you know, we're expecting a good game. I'm excited to go home and play. You know, like you said, I have a love for the community and a lot of the people in the community, and I still have ties to the coaching staff that's there, and they do a great job. And you know, if you really watch them and you're a coach, they're fun to watch because they really execute at times, especially early in this season with what they want to do, which is a tribute to them. You know,
mm-hmm. I keep waiting.
You know, Stoneham is Division VI. How is Stoneham a Division VI team?
It's all based on enrollment. I think they might be smaller than people think, school-wise, but I wouldn't be able to tell you. You know, I always take this, since all the changes have gone over the last 3 or 4 years with enrollments, divisions, this and that, I say, just get me the damn schedule and play whatever it is. That's the attitude you got to take, you know?
Well,
Way I feel, you know?
Yeah, this first week I'm looking at the teams, and then I go to the Globe to get their preview and the stuff, and I'm saying Division 6, Division 7, Division 8. Who knew? I mean, this is crazy.
Yeah. It changes all the time, every couple of years at least, and I think it's a very competitive division. There's some really good teams in there if you look at the North and the South, and, you know, Western Mass as well. I mean, Central Mass. I mean, there's some teams that are, you know, really, really good and compete very well, and you know, I think the new system's working out pretty good right now. I think a lot of people are happy with it. I know a couple of people weren't last year. I think if you play a solid schedule, especially in your non-league games, I think you got to love the system, you know. You play good teams and you come up a little bit short, you don't win, you still get some bonus points for that, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
So, like I said, you know, they just played a very tough game, very physical game with Stoneham, and they hung in tough with them, and we have a lot of challenges ahead, and starts with this one on Friday night.
All right. Strength of schedule this year, Coach. How's your schedule looking?
Oh, yeah. Well, the schedule maker the last 2 years has not been very good to us, but I will say, starting off with Kip, and I said they're going to win a lot of games this year at their league and their division.
Mm-hmm.
You know that. They're well-coached. They're going to get better as the year goes on. And then we have Winthrop, who's always going to be well-coached. They got tough, hard-nosed kids that are there, which we think is obviously enough. And next week we go in to Fiends coming to us on Friday night to Manning, and you know, we've been fortunate to be able to play with them the last couple years and had some success, and they're coming in with a very senior laden team, and you know, ranked at the top of Division II, right up there, top four, I think it was. So we're going to have, you know, our hands full. And then we come back, and then we get home again with Fenwick. So playing C and Fenwick back-to-back, I think that tells you our schedule strength.
Okay.
You know, that's going to that's tough. So not that the other ones are going to be easy, but it's just playing two physical teams like that back-to-back. Going to be a tough task ahead.
Tim, you want to ask the final question for Coach Driscoll?
When can we get together and trade a story?
Sure. Yeah, I know. Whenever you want. I mean, fall's kind of tough, but I'm easy to find.
Yeah.
What time do you practice on there? And where are you practicing?
Well, we're down. We still practice at the same location down at Gallagher Park, and we usually go about 3:15 every day. Sometimes we're fortunate enough to get Manning Field. But if you let me know when you're coming down, I'd love to have you.
All right, I will do that very, very soon. I know Gallagher very well. My cousins grew up right around the corner.
Yeah. You've been down one other time too. So yeah, sometimes you get to go over to Manning if it's available, and if you tell me a day and want to come out, let me know. We'll set it up.
Very good. Thank you, buddy.
Coach, appreciate it. I'm going to check in with you from time to time, and best of luck this year. Thanks for talking with us as always, Sean. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for reaching out, and have a good night, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Take care. Be well.
Good luck, buddy.
Thank you.
All right. That's Sean Driscoll, who is the Winthrop. I knew I was going to do it. He's the St. Mary's High School football coach. He's been there, again, for I believe this is his fifth year. And in the previous four seasons, 28-14 overall at St. Mary's, 86 wins overall, including 12 seasons at Winthrop. So real strong ties to the North Shore. And as he said, he's got a lot of kids who work for him in the summertime in Winthrop. So it's going to be quite an emotional game, I'm sure, for everybody over at Miller Field. When is that game, Tim? Let me look it up. Doo-be-doo-be-doo. Whoa. St. Mary's at Winthrop, 6:30 on Friday evening. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. I've got to try to get some. You know what? I'm going to do that right now, Tim. I'm going to forward you the agenda. Well, it won't work that way, will it? Don't leave the room, Tim. Over here, press this button, forward, and I'm going to put to Tim Kearns. And there you go. It is on its way. So hopefully you'll get it, Tim.
It's messed up, so I'm hoping it gets through.
Yeah, all right. Well, I just emailed Gary's agenda to you. We'll talk to Gary in a couple of minutes, and then we'll run through the agenda. If we have to, no worries. He's got four items on it, the President's Cup, the LIV Tour, Live Tour, Bass Rocks player, and Ferncroft player, among others. So we'll be right back as North Shore Sports Night continues here on MSO News Sports.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Writer at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right, Tim is back. Say hello to Gary, Tim.
Hello, Gary.
Hi, Timmy.
Hi, Timmy.
So glad hearing your voice.
Yes, it is. I'm so glad Gary is with us. And Gary, as always, a lot to catch up on in golf. And where would you like to start this evening?
Well, I think we should probably start with the pros. And Tim, I think we have to admit that very few people have much interest in the President's Cup, but I think after what happened yesterday at the BMW Championship, PGA Championship over in England, where Shane Lowry won the tournament and had a love fest with Rory McIlroy, they made no secret of the fact they were delighted that they, as loyal members of the old guard, which is the European Tour and the PGA Tour of America, that they were happy to beat up on all those LIV players who took part in the same tournament with them.
Oh, and weren't some of the players rather vocal about their displeasure, those guys showing up when they never showed up before, but now they saw it as an opportunity to grab points to qualify for the, you know, PGA next year, and some of their other friends who were playing on the European Tour got bumped out of the picture. And I'll tell you, it could be fisticuffs at the President's Cup.
Well, we thought there might be fisticuffs this past week when Billy Horschel talked a lot about in very derogatory terms about what the LIV guys were doing.
Yeah.
Live in the PGA Tour, and of course Billy Horschel and Ian Poulter did not come to fisticuffs. They seem to have a very civil, very public discussion on Wednesday, I believe, before the first round. And I think this will all iron its way out, whether it's in a year or 2 years, but at least there was no blood spilled last week. Whether we have any blood spilled at the President's Cup is yet to be seen.
That might make it worth watching if the cup is an exciting the sideshow could be.
You're right, it could be. But on the same subject, of course, big news last week has been reported, at least has not been confirmed by Commissioner Greg Norman or anyone else from the LIV Tour, but after the great tournament they had out at the International over Labor Day weekend, it sounds like they are not coming back to the Boston area, maybe not even in New England in 2023. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. I did notice that, yeah. It's a slap in the face, obviously, to New England. And I guess it was pretty well supported, which is the surprising thing.
Yeah, relatively speaking, but I think they're just trying to spread this thing around for a couple of years, not just in the U.S., but around the world, and we'll see, you know, if they develop any permanence in terms of what venues they play. In the next couple of years, so Boston's probably out next year. More words on the professional side. We should talk about the New England PGA Championship, Tim, that was held last week down in Cape Cod at Eastwood Ho 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 and New Seabury. And of course, Gloucester's own Jake Kramer from Bass Rocks was the first day leader. He didn't hold on to it, and none of our other players really played that well. But it was a good 102nd New England PGA Championship. Leon Friedman from Wollaston won it for the second time in a playoff, and it was a very good week. They were lucky to dodge the bullet with some rain out there down there at the New England PGA, but still a good showing for Jake Kramer as well as for his fellow pro staffer at Bass Rocks, Todd Scarafoni, who was really our top North Shore finisher. I think he finished 10th. Jake finished around 28th after that great start. But the New England PGA Championship is come and gone, and we look forward to next year's event wherever it's played.
And I got to go back to the throw just a second, Gary. And I just caught the story that Scotty Scheffler was the PGA Tour Player of the Year. He goes to the Texas football game, Texas Alabama game, and that's when they give him the award.
That was a nice touch. And did you see who was there to honor him at the same time after withdrawing from the BMW European PGA Championship? I guess Sergio Garcia skipped out after 2 days and withdrew. Maybe he didn't miss the cut. and he showed up at the game too. I guess he and Scheffler are pretty good buddies.
Ah, well, Scheffler is much more accomplished than I think a lot of people are aware of. He won the Contour Rookie of the Year. He was Player of the Year on the Corn Ferry Tour, Rookie of the Year on the PGA Tour. You know, the kid is quite accomplished, and I think if you have to be an aficionado of the inside of the golf news to be aware of all that, the resume that he has.
No, I agree, because he was in position to win two other majors and did not win a second major, but the mere fact he had such a popular victory at the Masters way back in April, the fact he did play pretty well, sustained his game for most of the rest of the year. When I thought it was a toss-up who might win that award, with Rory McIlroy being part of that thinking after we won the FedEx Cup Championship. But good for Scottie Scheffler. We'll see if he can build on that next year when they get around to starting back up on the tour for 2023.
Exactly.
I think we should also talk about, on another local angle, Ferncroft amateur Frank Vanna, who lives in Boxford. He's become like an adopted son here of the North Shore golf scene, because he's lived most of his life in Marlboro, and he still plays at a Marlboro Country Club, although we consider him playing out of Ferncroft, where he is also a member. Frank just the other day won his second Massachusetts Senior Amateur Championship. It was only one day rather than two, shortened because of some bad weather at Framingham Country Club. But Frank has now won, hold on to your hats, guys, Frank has now won 24 amateur championships in the state of Massachusetts, whether they be two Massachusetts amateurs, nine Massachusetts mid-amateurs, seven We Met Memorial, which is like a major amateur event around here. He keeps going. He's now 60 years old, but now we love to call him one of our own since he lives in Boxford, practices more than plays out of Ferncroft. And Frank is just going and going and going like the ever-ready battery.
That's quite an accomplishment. Wow. Go ahead, Tim.
You know, there are guys, Gary, that play for years and years and never come within a sniff. And here's Frank just cranking them out year after year.
He's taken very good care of himself physically. He's just a student of the game. But he's had a wonderful swing. He's kept that swing. You know, he also, just a couple weeks ago, you know, played in the U.S. Senior Amateur down at Catansett and qualified for match play. I think they had 200 players down there, and he was one of 64 that made it to match play. He won his first match, lost his second match on the 18th hole. But Frank is just extraordinary, and he's still going strong, and he may be 60, like we talked about Kirk Hinnefeld being old man river, but I think Kirk now at 66 and a half, he's probably winding down, I think, his playing career. We can now transfer that label very accurately and appropriately to Frank Vanna. Old Man River just keeps on going, and we'll see what he can do for winning more things next year.
Well, you just know the consistency that he plays with. He's never going to be far from the top of the leaderboard.
You're right, Tim. He's always had a great mental attitude, a wonderful, you know, golf game between the ears, as we call it. And he just keeps on doing it. I mean, I'm the one disappointment maybe between you and me and the oak tree behind my house here in Wenham would be that Frank's disappointed that he only won two Massachusetts amateurs, which is the, you know, ultimate championship to win in the state. For amateurs, nonetheless, he won two. He's had a couple of close calls, and just remarkable the way he keeps on winning, whether it's a short event or a long 54-hole event. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he adds to his 24 Massachusetts championships on the amateur side in 2023.
All right, do we have a column coming up this week in the Salem News?
We do. We do, Rick. Thank you for asking. We're going to be writing about PBD native Brian Hamilton, who had a wonderful club pro career up at Concord Country Club in New Hampshire, and then the last 20 years at Eastwood Hall, which I just talked about, down on Cape Cod and Chatham. And now Brian, at the age of 70, has gone the rules official route. He always wanted to be a rules official once he wrapped up his career, and he's now a very, very highly sought-after rules official for a New England PGA event as well as for PGA of America events. He worked this year's PGA Championship at Oak Hill. His goal right now, guys, is to make it to be an official, a rules official at the 2025 Ryder Cup.
Cool.
That's his goal right now. But Brian's doing a great job as a rules official after all those years as a player and as a club pro at two very special places here in New England.
All right, that's coming up in the Salem News. And, Gary, as the golf season sort of winds down, I want to ask if you'd be willing to take on a little assignment that I'd like to ask you, and that is the Salem News has been running a Mount Rushmore of articles in terms of sports for the area, for the Salem News coverage area. And one of the things that I really found interesting was who was your favorite interview, the most quotable guy, that kind of thing. The four writers came up with most excellent stories on that. Would you be willing to do that for us, to tell us maybe who your most memorable interview was or what it was over the years, and it could be professional or amateur or whatever. Would you do that for us? Because I love hearing your stories.
It's a good homework assignment. I'll jump into feet first, and I'll be ready for it. Hopefully share some very nice responses next week.
Wonderful, because we're going to do the same thing with Mike Grenier. We're going to give him the same assignment, so I appreciate it.
Very good.
Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Stay well. See you next week.
Very good. Take care. All right, that's Gary Larrabee, who is a sports historian and golf writer, and he's got some amazing anecdotes. Tim, have you ever been to Augusta National?
No, they heard of the way that I played golf. They wouldn't let me within the state lines of Georgia.
Well, okay. I have a friend who has visited there. He obviously didn't play golf there, but he watched a tournament there, and he said it's just everything Gary has said it is, and some of the best stories that I've heard about golf come from Augusta, from Gary. So we'll see what he comes up with, and I'm going to remind me that we have to ask Mike the same question, okay? Did you see those articles in the Salem News? I thought they were great.
Yeah.
They were tremendous.
Every week. It's just one of those things you know, once you read him, you look for him, because once you're done reading his, the main story, he's always got a couple little sidebar pieces.
Yeah.
It's like you've known the person all your life.
Mm-hmm.
He brings such a unique perspective to it.
Absolutely. All right. We'll take one more break, and then we'll come back and check in with Mike Grenier. Stay with us. This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. That's Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell working the phones tonight, getting all kinds of interviews and lots of stuff for the website tomorrow. So please check it out and tell people about it. We're what's left of audio and video news on the North Shore, I'm afraid.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Okay, we're back now with another great sports writer, Salem. He was with the Salem News, Mike Grenier. Mike, how are you?
We're doing okay. We're closer to the basketball season, and of course, the Patriots opened up with a horrible game.
Jim and I decided not to talk about that tonight, so
yes,
we're going to let it go. There's enough, you know, they've been thrown under the bus by everybody in Boston, I think.
It is premature. It is only one game.
Yep. All right, let's start with the loss of a player that the Celtics haven't had yet.
Right, Danilo Gallinari. I've been kind of like worried about this, Rick, to tell you the truth, because I thought his slot for the upcoming season was perfect in the sense that he probably would have been the seventh man or the second guy off the bench, or maybe Grant Williams comes off the bench and Brogdon's first guy, obviously, or Derek White. Gallinari was going to fit right in there as a scorer, possibly a big-time scorer, because that's been his history. Not a defensive player, but he's a legit 6'9", 6'9". He can rebound a little bit. But he's a tremendous scorer and a tremendous shooter and a good three-point shooter. And you miss a guy even though he's not been on the team yet, you know? And so I've been thinking, who fills that spot, right, Rick? Who fills that Gallinari absence, even though he hasn't played a game with the Celtics? So you kind of, there was some talk about Carmelo Anthony coming.
No.
And I'm glad that didn't happen.
Oh, God, yeah. No, we don't want that.
I keep seeing these names like Carmelo it's like, please don't do this to us, you know. We lived through the Kyrie, and it we still have a bad taste in our mouth. From attitude and the selfishness, and that's not who the Celtics have ever been when they've been successful. You know, the last time I think when it was that we had Curtis Rowe and
Sidney Wicks. Yep,
that's right.
You know,
that's right.
Back in the late '70s, and they were tremendous players at UCLA.
Yeah.
And they go out here, they would just cut off, and you couldn't wait to get rid of them.
That's right. We couldn't wait to get rid of them. Carmelo Anthony, I don't know if he fits into that category. However, I think there would have been poison for him to come here, a little bit poisonous with our two big studs, you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. So, although they're mature enough, I think, to filter out that stuff. However, we don't want Carmelo Anthony, so we've established that. So now, they haven't been looking that hard, or maybe they have, but the big names haven't popped up other than Carmelo Anthony. So I was looking at the existing roster, and Rick, you know, there's a name out there that maybe people around here might be somewhat familiar with who is on the Celtics roster, has a good chance to make the team, and that is Noah Vonleh, V-O-N-L-E-H, out of Haverhill, Massachusetts. Okay.
Okay.
He's 27 years old. He has spent 6-7 years in the league. As recently as 3 years ago, he started 57 games, for the Knicks, and he averaged like 8.5 points a game. He's been a player who's been with 3 or 4 or 5 different teams, and his career average is around 5 points a game. But he's a legit 6'9" who can rebound and who has kind of like, I would call him sort of a young veteran, the fact that he's only 27 years old. So I think he has a chance to fill that spot of a guy who can give you 8 or 9, 10 points in a given situation, 2 or 3 times a week, you know? And he's on the bigger side, being 6'9". And then another guy who has NBA experience, Rick, and we talked about him, I mentioned him a few weeks ago, Denzel Valentine, who is a terrific shooter, but he's a 6'4 guy, more of a shooting guard. So I think you'd bring him in, let's say, behind Brogdon or behind Marcus Smart, who will start. He'd be more of a wingman, you know, a guy who can shoot it and can take it to the basket, 6'4". But Noah Vonleh is a legit 6'9". So those are the two intriguing young veteran players that the Celtics will be watching closely during training camp and during the preseason.
Well, are these guys, how do I phrase it? Are they eligible to be traded or cut or what?
They're signed contracts to the Celtics, but they're eligible. I don't know if they have that two-way status where they would be stashed away in Maine. I'm not sure about that.
So wait a minute. I missed out on that. I zoned out. So these are homegrown guys?
Oh, yeah, these are homegrown guys.
Oh, okay.
And Noah Vonleh, I've actually talked to him when he came in with the Knicks about 3 years ago. I encountered him in the corridor before the game, and I said, hey, you went to Havel High School, right, for a while. And he was, like, stunned that anybody would know that, you know what I mean? And he kind of chuckled, and we talked, and he was a very nice kid. And I think he went out and scored, like, 12 or 14 that night against the Celtics. So he's an intrigue. Like I said, he has legitimately 6 or 7 years of experience, and he's averaging five points a game in his career. That's because the last couple of years he's kind of bounced around. I think he actually went to China to try to keep his career alive. He played in Shanghai, and now he's back, and the Celtics like his experience. So I think that's one guy that they're going to take a close look at. And I mentioned Denzel Valentine. And other than that, you know, you're looking at guys who had a cup of coffee with the Celtics last year. Luke Kornet, who's 7'2", kind of awkward, but he can shoot the three. He can rebound a little. Maybe he can give you 8 or 10 minutes. He's probably a better defensive player than Enos Kanter, Freedom Democracy, or whatever his name is now. So those are the possibilities as you go into training camp. I mean, you looked at the Celtics now, and I think I love the five starters. And then you bring in Brogdon, and it's like having a sixth starter when he plays, because he's not going to be any drop-off in productivity or excellence when he's on the floor. I think, actually, the game could pick up when he's, you know, the Celtics' excellence level could pick up when he's on the floor, because he's that good, you know? And, Tim, you mentioned a guy, here's a guy who's, you're picking up a guy who's averaged 19 points a game in the NBA at one point. So, therefore, That's a tremendous pickup right there, you know?
Yeah, all these names, like, have such a lack of notoriety or familiarity with Celtic fans, unless you're a Celtic fan and you just spent all day looking at their roster and who they've signed. Because it's like, my God, who are these guys? You know, it always seemed in years past, and for me, like the rest of us, the years past are years past. You know, we knew everybody's name, but now there are so many guys hanging around looking for an opportunity.
Right, and a lot of them, Tim, have, when they run out of NBA opportunity, they go off to Europe to play, or they go off to China to play. And they come back. But in the case of Noah Vonleh and Denzel Valentine, they have legit NBA experience. And I'm talking not just a year or two, and they're not trying to make a comeback at age 31. I'm talking about guys who are still in the prime of their careers at age 26, 27, who are looking for that opportunity. They're not going to take up Marcus Smart's spot, but they can give you like 7, 8 points, 9 points, 10 points on a given night. And play when guys are injured, and because they have NBA experience, they're not going to hurt you too much. So therefore, you're looking to fill out the roster right now with fringe players who can actually help you. And I think those are the guys that can actually help you, because the core strength, obviously, is still, we're talking Al Horford, we're still talking Marcus Smart, we're talking, you know, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Nothing wrong with that lineup. So you're looking to fill out the roster with guys who can add some defense and rebounding, and of course, Udoka will be the guy who cares the most about this is Jaime Udoka, because he's the one who's going to slot these guys in and give them the proper playing time that they'll need to help the Celtics. So he's the guy that counts, I guess, is what I want to say.
If you don't get someone to fill that hole by the injury, and you know the guys you suggested don't pan out or whatever, can the Celtics still? How far can the Celtics go with their present roster of the names that we know that are, you know, still there?
Yeah, you know what, Rick? I think that's a great question, and I'd say they can go far, because I don't see, and you look at the Eastern Conference, who can't they beat, okay? When you add a Brogdon to that mix, and we're talking also, too, we haven't mentioned Grant Williams, who has considerable experience, and who will certainly add to that bench strength. So you're talking like 7 or 8 guys deep already, okay? So I think, you know, I can foresee them actually being certainly a number one contender, you know, a top of the Eastern Conference. I mean, they're going to be fighting for that spot with Milwaukee. And again, a familiar, two teams that are familiar to me as far as contenders would be the Milwaukee Bucks and the Miami Heat. I think they're right there with either of those teams as far as being a contender to get to the finals.
You know, Mike, the interesting part is, as the NBA, as last year's NBA season came to a close,
yeah,
everybody was picking the Celtics to be in the finals for this year.
Yeah, sure. Sure, and I think they've improved themselves. I think the Malcolm Brogdon addition is a big one, Rick. And Tim, I think you'd have to agree because he's been around. He's been a tremendous scorer. And Rick, when you talk about attitude, we love to talk about attitude, and Tim mentioned Carmelo Anthony's attitude, and we don't want him around. But Brogdon's attitude is that he came in and he had his press conference with the Celtics and was like, he was all about, I want to be a contributor. I don't need to be a starter. He said all the right things, and he's always been a humble guy. From the, I mean, I went to some of his games when he's with the Bucks and all that, and he's all about team, and he's a humble guy, and he's a very good player. So I think he fits in perfectly as a great addition to that team. And of course, Derek White, who I'm not sold on 100%, but at least he's got experience, and he got big game experience in the playoffs, and gave him some great games, but he also gave him some not so great games. But the point is, he's a legit talent, and maybe having a training camp under his belt this year will help him considerably.
So they're fairly deep through 7 and 8 then?
I think so. I think they're deep enough, Rick, and I think, as we all know, when teams get deep in the playoffs, right, Tim, the coaches tend to go with just 7 players, maybe 8, you know, unless it's a blowout of some type, and then you might have a 9th or 10th guy contributing. But you want to develop those 7 or 8 guys that are going to be there at the end of the, you know, deep into the playoffs next June. And you know, the Celtics can do that with the talent they have. And I think the things we have to watch out for, and the thing that hurt them this past season, right, Rick, was the fact that both Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown played really heavy minutes leading into the playoffs and in the playoffs. And I think they were gassed by the time they played the Golden State Warriors. And, of course, we have to mention Horford, right, Tim? Because he'll be 37 years old at some point in the coming season here, so you have to watch out for his minutes.
Yeah, and you know, I think they did a really good job last year, meaning his minutes so that, you know, he looked really good in the finals, and you just hope, and you know, his experience there is going to put in his mind that he has to be that kind of a fan or maintain what he has done to keep himself in the kind of playing shape that he brought last year.
Yeah.
And got to manage his minutes so that, you know, he's in there when he's really needed.
Right. And to be put, I mean, he was phenomenal in the playoffs, I thought, for his age. And not only that, Rick, we mentioned, obviously, we always talk about Tatum and Brown and how they're still developing, and now they're kind of going to get into the heart of their careers, you know, into the prime years. And what better guy to have around as a locker room influence than Al Horford?
Well, I'm pretty sure it was this time last year when we brought that up, wasn't it?
Sure. I mean, he is still that factor, a huge factor in the locker room. And, you know, let's face it, Marcus Smart is now an 8-year veteran, and so he should bring more maturity into that locker room. So, you know, he'll come back hungry after coming so close to winning it all. We always know he's hungry, even if he's playing in a preseason.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you want him around in the big games because he's played on the big stage before, and he's played well on the big stage, and he's ready for another season of that. So when you add his experience and you're talking about Tatum and Brown coming into the prime of their careers, yeah, Rick, to answer your original question, I can foresee them, you know, obviously injury is always a factor. However, I can foresee them with the starting five and with Brogdon and these other guys that I've mentioned, I can see them certainly going back to the finals.
Okay. I hate to cut this short, but I've got to call a football coach here in a couple of minutes for another interview after we finish the program. But I do have a homework assignment for you, Mike.
Yes. I think I heard Mr. Gary Larrabee talk about it with Gary Larrabee.
Yeah.
To consider some type of thing about my favorite interviews or something like that?
Yeah, you've talked in the past about specific guys that we've asked you about, and I'm just wondering, you know, you saw the Salem News Mount Rushmore thing, and who maybe is one of your favorite interviews that you couldn't wait to talk with or something along those lines? And it could be a high school, college, or pro, just someone that, and I think you mentioned, who was it? Was it Don Zimmer? It was Zimmer. I mean, that's one of the greatest stories I've ever heard. So something along those lines.
Oh, absolutely, Rick. I mean, like I said, I'll think a lot about it because, like you said, it could be amateur or pro,
mm-hmm.
or high school, whatever. So, yeah, I'll be thinking about that.
Fantastic. Hey, Mike, thank you so much. Can't wait till next week.
Take care, guys.
All right, see you, Mike.
See you, Mike.
All right, that's Mike Grenier, who is sports journalist. And, Tim, I hate to cut us short here, but I got to go talk with Coach Nolan about our game of the week coming up.
Okay, good night, Rick.
All right, Tim, thank you so much. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. All right, that's Tim Kearns, our producer engineer, of course, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell working the trenches for us, as he always does. And don't forget, many, many, many interviews coming up this week regarding high school sports and other sports. And, of course, the North Shore Sports Show, North Shore Sports Desk coming up this week as well with Nick and Nick. All that stuff here on MSO New Sports. Thank you for joining us. This is MSONewsports.com. My name is Rick Moore with MSO Sports. Appreciate your listening in. Thank you. Bye-bye.